Nervous.
Speak for yourself.
Some people are probably wondering why they've asked me to kind of referee. I used to work in London, and so I've got a tiny insight into the world of business, but it's a bit of a faded memory. But what I do remember is really high-speed interactions and the absolute focus on the bottom line of profit and just really ambition that you could literally just taste. What I actually do each year is I reread an incredibly powerful article by a guy. He's a Christian guy called Clayton M. Christensen, and he is a high-profile consultant. He used to consult for IBM and the like, and he is now a lecturer at Harvard Business School. And he wrote an article in the Harvard Business Review some years ago now and called How Will You Measure Your Life? And Clayton, as I say, is a committed Christian, and whilst he was studying, he used to dedicate an hour each day to reading God's word and asking him and thinking and praying about what his purpose in life was. And he said that whilst it was a huge commitment, whilst his time as a scholar, it actually was not misspent time. And now a lecturer, each year in the final week of his time with his students at Harvard, Clayton asked them three questions. And I'm not going to be asking the guys these questions, but I just thought it's something for us all to mull over. So he informs them in their final week at Harvard that this is the final time that they'll get space to think. He says, after college, you won't, so you need to know now what your answers are, and then that will pave the way for how you behave in business. And this is what he asks them. He says, your first question is, how can you be sure that you'll be happy in your career? The second is, how can you be sure that your relationships with your spouse and your family become an enduring source of happiness? And the third question he asks them is, how are you going to stay out of jail? And I'm not going to be asking all of those, but a few years ago, the third question would have felt quite a strong one. And we look at now the phone hacking scandal and the VW emissions scandal, and we see how pertinent it is. So I just want you guys to kind of mull over those questions yourselves, and I'm going to be asking a few questions of my own to Ed and Gray. I nearly forgot your name then.
We're using the hashtag awkward, if you want to put that on Twitter.
It's been a long weekend, sorry.
It's been a longer life, darling.
Which of us is the referee?
Oh, my goodness me.
You're regretting this, Chris.
Ed, shall we start with you? I'm now looking. Okay. I'm going to have to put my glasses back on so I know which one's my first question. Ed. So, Frederick Hertberg, who is an American psychologist, he published the best-selling Harvard review of How Do You Motivate Your Employees, says, the most powerful motivator in lives isn't money, rather there's the opportunity to learn, grow in responsibility, contribute to others, and to be recognised for your achievements. Would you agree? And what would you add to that?
I became a Christian when I was 24, so I'd already started my career, and my career was going quite well, and I focused entirely on success as it was meant in the worldly terms. I wasn't particularly money-focused. I've never been particularly money-focused. It kind of was more, almost a barometer of where you'd got rather than the end in itself. But I think driving, you see it, I mean, I see it every day. I get, because in my role, I'm one of the MDs of one of the companies. So therefore, lots of people come to me saying, you know, I need more money. I need this. I need that. I need the other. And for some people, their entire motivation is money and the drive to succeed. Personally, my motivators tend to be, I just want it to be the best it can be. And so I then put lots of pressure on myself to be the best that I can be and take everything on in my own strength. And becoming a Christian, one of the biggest challenges for me was to actually do things in God's strength and not actually try and shoulder everything myself or leave God out of my career because I was doing pretty well on my own. So if you could just be around for when I'm doing family stuff or when I'm sitting up front so that people go, what a holy guy. That would be brilliant, but for the work stuff, you leave it to me, son. I've got it covered. And I think that kind of challenge is something that is very personal. Everyone has different things, but that's my one. But I think we have to be with God each day in what we do, And I think a big way of doing that, and one of the scariest things about doing that in the workplace and in your career, is to actually admit to people that you're a Christian. Sitting in your office and saying, I am a Christian, can impact your career. There is no two ways about it. People see you as the religious nutter that, I don't want to work with him. He's one of those God botherers, which is what I've had before. And it does have an impact. But at the same time, it keeps you in check because people will say to you, you know, I thought you were a Christian, call yourself a Christian. And actually, it's standing out and being upfront about it. You won't always succeed. You will often fail. But still standing strong in it actually keeps you on the straight path rather than the slightly easier and crooked one. That's probably more than you wanted.
I just realised that I asked you the wrong question. So I'm going to ask you the right one now. But you did receive confirmation about recently about feeling called to stay in your role at work, didn't you? And I really want you to share that story because I think it's a really powerful one.
Okay, you carry on playing on your phone, fella. We'll be right with you. So before New Wine, and as an ongoing thing actually in my working life, since becoming a Christian, I always thought that people that worked in full-time ministry were just, you know, much better Christians. What I did was meaningless in the light of eternity. Basically, my job is to make rich people richer, which is, let's be honest, you're never going to write a folk song about that, are you? So, and that is what I do, and it happens to be what I'm good at. And I'd always thought I wanted to do that. Well, what I've realized, of course, is that God uses us wherever we are. It's an amazing thing if you're called to be Billy Graham, but very few of us are. Most of us actually just, you bump into someone in Tesco's, you bump into someone at work, how you are every day is the impact you have. So, as I guess a lot of people may or may not know, the company that I was part of sold 18 months ago. And that changed a lot of things. And it meant that I had a three-year window where I was committed to staying at the company to then think about what I wanted to do with my life. Suddenly, you know, I was no longer in a career. What do I do? And I thought, okay, I'm gonna stop. I don't know what to do. And the fixation of this came about on me focusing on my car, because I'm very big on cars, as anyone knows. And at the time, I had a Porsche, which is, you know, one of those things, isn't it? But I had this thing, and I came out each day, and I looked at my Porsche, and I thought, that's beautiful. And then I look at the world around me, and I looked at the news, and praying about it with Ali, and I thought, actually, there are better uses for my money. I get a company car allowance to pay for it all. But there's better uses for that money than just me having something that I enjoy whizzing to work in. So we went to New Wine and prayed about it. And at New Wine on the last day, I was asking God for a specific example. You know, please, Lord, tell me if it's the right thing to get rid of this car. And then the speaker on the last day, Simon Ponsonby, who, frankly, I wish I'd stayed in the tent for that particular one because I don't have a Porsche anymore because of him. He got up at the front and talked about this guy that had written a Christian song who had a heart for the poor. And he said that he got a certain sum of money, but he did and gave it all away. He said he didn't get this sum of money and go out and buy a detached house and a Porsche. As I say, hashtag awkward is the Twitter tag we're using. And so I went and spoke to him afterwards, and everybody in the row, including the Hicks and Smiths and the Paynes and everyone else, just looked forward and like this at me down the road, which in itself was awkward. So I went and spoke to him afterwards and said, you know, you said this in your talk. I got that exact amount of money. I went out and I bought a detached house and a Porsche. And he said, you are kidding me. I said, nope. And so he said, well, just to encourage, and I said, I've been praying about waiting for a word on this thing. And he said that he's told that story many, many times, and never before has he used that line about the money, the car and the Porsche and the house, because of the fact that it can actually be quite offensive to judge people on what they spend their money on, and so he doesn't normally like to do it. But on this occasion, God chose to, and here I am. So we got rid of the Porsche, and we're now giving the money away instead. But the main thing was, I talked to him, and he was saying, what is it you do? And I said, well, I work for a company. He said, do you get paid well? And I said, yes, I do get paid well. He said, do you have a heart for the poor? And I said, yes, I do. He said, are you generous by nature? Do you give? And I say, I certainly try to. I think one of, You know, it always sounds a bit dodgy when you say, one of my gifts is I'm incredibly generous. But frankly, people, it's true. So, but the point is that God was challenging me in that. And the word I got was, actually, if that's what you're good at, do that. So rather than for me trying to go out and, you know, wanting to be John, going out to minister to people and being beaten with rods and sacrificially having a thorn in my side, I suddenly felt a complete peace about doing what I do, because of what I do, other people can go out and be Billy Graham, and I still have a mission field in the workplace. So, yes.
Awesome. Thanks, Ed. I love the fact that your focus isn't on money, but money seems to focus on you. I love that. And but it is the motive of the motivator for a lot of our businesses. I remember when I was in a specific meeting when I was kind of moving from a managerial role to a directorship role, and I was in the meeting and we were talking about how good my relationships were with my clients and stuff, and the board said to me, ultimately, we don't care about your relationships. We care about how much money you make from them. And so I just wondered, had you experienced that, Gray, and how would you deal with it?
Yeah, I'm going to have to be quick because the kids are about to come back. But,
No, they're not. It's so rude.
I think that's really difficult.
I think that's enough from you, then.
I think that's a really challenging one because it's not a sort of an attitude I've had to work with. And I think I'd really struggle to work under someone that just wanted to purely chase people for the money that they could give to the business. And I think that, you know, I work in marketing, and, you know, the kind of the mantra in terms of whatever type of marketing you do is that the client or the customer is always key. And that's not just marketing, that's any business, because without customers, you know, you don't have a business. And so everything that we need to do or we try to do is focused upon making sure that our clients are serviced and fulfilled in the best kind of way. I think that one of the things that I have experienced is that you do need to have discernment. You need to pray for discernment sometimes, because you can spend an awful lot of time. One of my roles is to go out and generate business for, I work for an architectural practice, and they have very big contracts, and so, you know, it takes a long time. You can spend a lot of time sort of lunching and schmoozing and sort of trying to build relationships with people, and ultimately, many of those, you know, maybe I'm just really bad at my job, but, you know, 80-90% of all those leads and those opportunities that you follow down come to nothing. Harvey's shaking his head, yes, I'm really bad at my job. But, you know, what you need to do is you need to try and pray for a bit of wisdom and just appreciate that actually there are people out there that will kind of waste your time as well. So you do need to kind of just approach the right things. But, you know, part of that marketing philosophy, but also my philosophy in business is just to be nice to everyone, certainly finance and IT, because you get better equipment and you don't seem to have a problem getting paid. But, you know, I think it's really important, because it's true, like that old adage about climbing up the ladder and coming back down. You know, no matter what industry you work in, what kind of business you work in, you will work within fairly small circles of people, and you will come across those people time and time again. And I think if you burn bridges and if you have bad relationships with people, that will always come back to being kind of quite difficult. I did have one boss when I worked at a business where we had a big Asian part of the business, and it was a typical kind of structure for an Asian business. There's one guy at the top and hundreds of people beneath him, and he was always very expected that everyone within his business would just do whatever he asked. He had lots of minions and sort of floors and floors of people, and he was never challenged on anything. And then he met me, and we were forced to work on a project together for a big exhibition, and I fundamentally just disagree with his kind of pile them high, sell them cheap approach, which I felt was undervaluing our side of the business and the way that we did things, and, you know, British approach is very, very different. And we clashed. But actually, you know, I felt it was very important, as much as everyone's going, you know, you can't upset Keith, you know, that he's so-and-so. You know, without sort of being aggressive about it, you have to have personal values and you stick to those values. And as a Christian as well, I think sometimes we can, you know, easily roll over because we don't want to be up front. We don't want to be sort of tough with someone. You know, and I hate the idea that we basically may just get taken advantage of for that. And I think that it's very important that you stick to your values, you stick to your morals personally, because once you roll over and you step over that line in the sand, that's something you can't return over that line again. So I think it's important that your personal values should be reflected in the way that you work with people.
I'm going to go back to you just really quickly, because in Genesis 28:16 it says, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." I know that there was a situation at your work that felt impossible but turned around. I just wondered if you could share it, because that was about
Yeah, I mean, obviously, lots of people here, no matter what jobs you have, whether you're in business or whether you work in a sort of a corner shop somewhere, you know, the recession that we've all been through has been incredibly challenging on all of us. And certainly within kind of construction and property, it's one of those areas when the banks stop giving money, jobs don't happen and everything just, you know, everything falls away. So, you know, when Lehman Brothers went down, we were just celebrating that we'd merged with another business and we were 450 of us. There are 120 of us in the business now, and that's when we started to grow again. And so we were very, very close to folding during the recession. You know, we didn't know. Several times we'd break up for Christmas and didn't know if we'd have a job to go back to in January. And that, you know, as a director in the business, it meant that we had to make some very tough decisions, which I struggle with personally as a Christian, but also just within the business. And, you know, we have, luckily, a very nice culture where we, you know, we are like a family. I think that some of the board meetings we had were very tough, and there'd be 12 guys around the table, and there were times when we had board directors crying at the end of the table because the sheer weight of stress and pressure. It was working our way down names of who we were going to make redundant, who we weren't, and also the financial impact. We were taking quite significant pay cuts. They've got their own families to support and mortgages to pay as well. And I remember at one stage just sitting there kind of getting that sort of hot feeling and your heart starts to flutter. I feel like I need to share, you know, my faith. And I hadn't really kind of shared my faith openly with my kind of close colleagues. And I just sort of blurted out and I said, you know, I'm a Christian and I believe that, you know, we'll get through this. You know, I've been praying. And actually, despite this madness that was going on and this stress and this fear, I felt very calmly that God was going to provide. And I had that that phrase, I think it's in Matthew 6, where it's just about sort of the birds, they do not sow, they do not reap or whatever it is, and yet they're not worried, you know, and do not think that God thinks more of you. And for me, I just knew that God would provide for us in some way. And actually, even those that we had to make redundant ended up in probably slightly better situations, or, you know, they are supported. So I think that just having that peace of God's provision over me really helped. And what happened since through sharing that, and then I used to start to feel brave enough to send some Word for Today passages around to some of my directors that I felt were pertinent. They then started to say, look, we really need that big check to come in from China so we can pay the salaries on time. Do you think you can have a word with the big man upstairs? And so that's amazing. And they're now starting to kind of ask for me to pray.
And big check from China.
And he did. Yeah, of course he did.
So, Ed, what do you think your mission is in your organisation? When people in ministry, you know, we have to deal with people who've been bereaved or divorced or they're going through challenges. And how are you doing that in your organisation?
Well, it's a difficult one because Chris Shaw used to work for me, so I can't actually make up an answer here, I have to be honest. He's now taking notes, that's awkward. I think regardless of whether you're running the company or you're it's your first ever job and you've just started, I think the challenge as a Christian in the workplace is that we can wait until we're perfect before we start talking to people about being a Christian. I don't want to let God down. I don't want people to see what I'm really like because, you know, then they won't become believers. So I'm just going to, once I've sorted this out within myself, then I'll share. And I think it's really important that we just stand out and say that we're Christians. We're not perfect. We're never going to be perfect. If we wait until we are perfect, it will be far, far too late and we'll all be very dead. So I think, you know, in terms of how I am at work, there are times, I think, when I can be kind and supportive and hopefully loving and compassionate. That is what I try to be. In the stresses and strains of working and all the pressures that go with it, I am sure that there are times that I am far from that. And in all of those times, whether great or bad, everybody knows that I'm a Christian, you know, and I stand by that. You know, if people question me or say, I thought you were supposed to be a Christian, that's not a very kind thing to say. An apology is actually one of the strongest skills, I think, in business that's most underused. I can't look weak. I can't lose face. I'm in charge. You'll do what I say is an easy thing to fall back on rather than to say, I tell you what, on that occasion, I was wrong and I'm sorry. So I think those are really important things. And to just keep going, you don't know what words you say have an impact. You know, right, negative, I mean, and I've got a gob on me, and I think everybody knows that. So there are plenty of occasions where I've had an impact that I'm sure has been extremely negative. I hope, my friends tell me, but then I guess they're my friends, that there are times when I say things that have a positive impact. But either way, it's the heart with which you say them and the way that you strive to do things. And don't worry about the fact that 25 people haven't come to the front at the at the end of your office saying, actually, you've challenged me with how you've lived so much, I want to be a Christian. You just don't know what's going to happen. And I mean, one story I'll share very, very briefly, but it's always touched me. There was a guy from People International, which is an international charity, and Clive, who used to run the charity, told us a story once that there was this guy who had a real heart for Uzbekistan. So People International basically reach everybody with a stan on the end, any countries like that. And they go out there and they live amongst them and they work amongst them, they learn the language. He could not get his head around the language. He was a great linguist, but could not get his head around this language. Tried for 6-7 months, tried, got absolutely nowhere with it, and lived amongst these people. In the end, they moved him to a different mission field because he couldn't get along with it. Next guy came in who could speak the language, started to talk to them about Jesus. All these people said, oh, yeah, he used to live here. And just the way that this guy had been meant that they thought he was Jesus from the descriptions that they'd had. He thought he had been a complete failure. He was nowhere near that field to see the impact that it had, but it did have that impact. Just a kind word, being compassionate, are you okay, being friendly, might have an impact on that person in 15 years when they think back to what you've done and think, they were a Christian, I might look into that. When we think of the song, somebody said this to us earlier this week, but when you think of the song, We Plough the Fields and Scatter, it's we plough the fields and scatter the good seed on the land, but it is fed and watered by God's almighty hand. We don't save anybody. So, you know, if there's one thing you take from all of this, drop that burden if you've got it, because it's not down to you. Just be a Christian, say you're a Christian, try to be loving, accept you're going to fail, and keep going, and you'll be amazed at the impact we can have on the lives in our community, in our workplaces, and on the world. The end.
Oh, man, I love that.
No pressure, Gray.
I think that's really powerful. I was just telling Liz and Ali this week, because I read Justin Welby's biography. Makes me sound really holy, doesn't it? And he was saying that he gave his life in one of the Nickies from HDB, one of the Nickies' bedrooms. And the Nicky, the guy who it happened with, had forgotten all about that until he read it in his biography. And he said, wow, you know, he brought, you know, the Archbishop of Canterbury, you know, came to faith, and he kind of forgot about it, and we just don't realise the impact. And even when things do happen and people do come to Christ, sometimes what we don't see as being, like, massively impactful is, it, you know, can just be incredible. So I've got a final question for you, Gray. I'm not going to ask about your split of time. I actually can say, when we work with young people and we're really aware of how low self-esteem can really have an impact on their lives. And so mine's a two-part question. How people feel about themselves can impact their home life, and therefore your staff, how they feel about themselves can impact their home life. Bearing in mind that you're in a leadership role, how do you motivate your staff's self-esteem to ensure that they have positive home life, positive relationships in their home environments, like the Christian Christiansen said, that was, how do you maintain your relationships? And I just wondered, as a leader, how do you ensure that they're in a good frame of emotional well-being in order that they're having positive relationships elsewhere?
I think the first thing is to try and be a good model.
Role model.
A good model of...
Do your catalogue poses, love?
No. Hashtag awkward. I think to be a good role model as a leader, which can be quite difficult because, again, there's a lot of expectation placed upon you to kind of set the standards. And I think that if you immediately create a culture where you're in at sort of 7:30 in the morning and you're not leaving until 7 o'clock at night, everyone else is going to feel like they have to live up to that. I don't subscribe to that at all, and I'm in at 8:30, 8:45, I'm going to make sure that I'm out the door by 6 o'clock, because to me, putting my kids to bed is very important. Now, I'm slightly older than a lot of, you know, I've got guys that are sort of 10 years older than me, then I'm sort of in the middle a bit, and then most of our kind of office, our workforce are younger, so they kind of, some of them have got young children, some of them haven't quite got there yet. And everyone's at different stages in life, and I think it's, you know, your priorities will change as you go throughout. But for us, it's very important that people don't feel pressured into doing things that they don't want to do. And I think that their fulfillment, and it comes back to the quote from Friedrich Dudar that you kind of mentioned about what actually motivates people and what's important to them. I think people need to feel that their work, as much as they've got to be passionate about it, and obviously to be good at what they do, to make sure that it's, you know, the business is successful, it's a means to an end. It's not your life. And I'm a very strong believer that your identity is not in your job. It's in all the other aspects. And so I'm always keen to make sure that people are aware of that and actually they don't spend too much time in the workplace. And again, that's difficult because I work for an architectural practice and it's in the DNA of architects to work until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. It's also in the DNA of architects to roll in about 1 o'clock in the afternoon as well because of it. But I think, you know, they're fueled on coffee. They're very, very passionate about what they do. And you've got to try and, as a leader, absorb that and allow them to be who they want to be, but also not kind of create a culture as a leader that is going to kind of create a space that you wouldn't want to be in yourself. So I think, yes, making time, allowing them to make time for their family, having fun is so important. How many people go to work and it's just heads down at the desk, can't wait until 5:30 and I'm out again. And you've got to enjoy the process. You know, it often occurs to me that I spend so much more time with my colleagues and not with my family. And who do I love more? Well, family, obviously. So, yeah, it's just about I think being a role model is the most important thing you can do.
I wonder, finally, can we just ask you for areas of prayer that you would like us to pray for you for? I'm going to give you a minute. I'm just going to tell a story that my children actually thought Chris Wicks was Jesus when they were little, because they used to come here every week. I said to the boys, so what did you think, boys? And they said, Jesus wasn't there. And I said, I kind of felt that too. Sorry, don't record this.
This is available on the website for download.
And then we realised that they meant Chris Wicks. So you're Jesus to my little boys as well. So areas of prayer. Can we edit this?
Fantastic.
Please.
They must have been quite scared, bearing in mind how much of heaven's going to be singing. I thought we'd established we could edit it. Is that not right?
Hashtag regret, Chris.
I think prayer, I mean, if we're talking about prayer for me personally in the workplace, and I think for anybody in the workplace, if you want to stand out and be a Christian, and in workplace, any part of your life, having close friends, having people that can pray for you, having people that you can text, email to say, I'm struggling with whatever it might be, I think is essential. It's like the old analogy that's been used in sermons, you know, since time immemorial, of the coal that falls out of the fire ceases to be hot. We need to be surrounded by other hot coals to keep ourselves burning white hot, and that can come in the challenges of work. So when things are building up and this is my busiest part of the year. Some of our biggest things are going wrong at the moment, and it's all my responsibility, so therefore it's all my fault if it goes wrong. And that's very easy to forget about, prayer, forget about other things until this is fixed. And being able to ask your friends is really important. I also have always had mental health issues. I believe it's the PC way of saying it. In that I am bipolar, so I get very, very low or very, very high, which accounts for my personality, I'm sure. But that is a particularly difficult thing, and having friends supporting me in that is really important as well. So prayer, and being able to, so just c- continue to pray, really, that I can keep going and that I ask for help when I need help and that I stay close to my friends.
Friends are better at receiving that than others, aren't they?
I think that there may well be people here today that that feel that the job they're in is not the path that God has planned for them. And if that's the place you're in and you struggle with it every time you walk through the door of the office or the shop or wherever it is that you work, and you think, surely, Lord, this cannot be what you have planned for me. You know, we can't all be archbishops. We can't all have roles which are purely centered on some kind of evangelical or kind of sort of faith-driven role. But actually, I think it's finding peace in that and what you do, you know, and just praying for people that they will find the right path if it's not where they're currently at, but also to look at the role that they're in. And you know, and God has to place all of us in different positions. And so I think that it's important that you just take time and say, where can I fulfill my role that God has planned for me in the place that I'm in? So it's just having peace on that and actually looking for the opportunities, not looking for the challenges and the obstacles.
Cool. Thank you.